When someone visits from out of town, what do we do? Do we sit and watch TV the whole time they're with us? Or do we want to show them the local sites? When we're busy, or when we're done with the things with which we're busy as to why they came, you know, whether it was a sporting event or some family event or something, when we're done with that, we often want to show them some of the local sites, either natural or man-made that we like and we think they might be impressed with as well. And this is exactly what the disciples did with Jesus in Jerusalem. And if Jesus came here, what would we show him? And what would he say? You know, he might say, well, I created it all anyways. I know what it looks like. He might say, well, just wait until you get to heaven and see that place. And he might even say, well, you should have seen it before the worldwide flood and before I had to curse it because of Adam and Eve's sin. Yet, he will not say any of those things. Because when the disciples do show him an impressive sight in Jerusalem, he says none of those things to which I just alluded, but rather, he speaks of the destruction of this magnificent sight that they're going to show him. Let's look at Mark 13, verses 1 through 4. Where the disciples tell their master, look at these magnificent buildings, or this building. Starting in verse 1, Mark 13. Then as he went out of the temple, one of his disciples said to him, teacher, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here. And Jesus answered and said to him, do you see these great buildings? Not one stone shall be left upon another that shall not be thrown down. Now as he sat on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign when all these things will be fulfilled? Four disciples want to know what he is talking about and when are these things going to happen. Yeah, as you can see, first of all, in verse 1, one of the disciples points out to Jesus the temple and the buildings associated with it and the stones, how they've been cut, how they've been hewn to all fit in place perfectly. And if you read ancient accounts of the temple, whether of Solomon's temple, which is described in the Bible, or of Herod's temple, which was then standing, it sounds like it was quite an impressive sight. In fact, in John chapter 2 and verse 20, the Bible says that it took 46 years to build Herod's temple, whereas it took only 7 years to build Solomon's temple. One man by the name of Josephus, whom I'll mention later, who was born in the year A.D. 37, when he writes of the temple, he says that you could see the gold that was overlaid on the temple. You could just see it for miles and miles away, especially when the sun would hit it. And the glory that would just be coming off that would be quite an impressive sight. So here's this magnificent temple, the temple of God in the city of God, and Jesus startles them, prophesying that these impressive local sites shall be destroyed, according to verse 2. And they ask him in verses 3 and 4, well, when are these things going to happen? Is this something that they will witness? Can they know when it is going to happen so as to be gone when it does, and so they can warn others about it? He answers all those questions for them now, starting at verse 5. So let's again read what Jesus says to them. And Jesus, answering them, began to say, take heed But no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, saying, I am he, and will deceive many. And when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be troubled. For such things must happen, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there will be earthquakes in various places. And there will be famines and troubles. These are the beginnings of sorrows. But watch out for yourselves, for they will deliver you up to councils, and you will be beaten in the synagogues. And you will be brought before rulers and kings for my sake, for a testimony to them. And the gospel must first be preached to all the nations. But when they arrest you and deliver you up, do not worry beforehand or premeditate what you will speak. But whatever is given you in that hour, speak that. For it is not you who speak, but the Holy Spirit. Now brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. And you will be hated by all men for my name's sake. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. But when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing where it ought not, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. And let him who is on the housetop not go down into the house nor enter to take anything out of his house. And let him who is in the field not go back to get his garment. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those with nursing babies in those days. And pray that your flight may not be in winter. For in those days there will be tribulation, such as has not been from the beginning of creation which God created until this time, nor ever shall be. And unless the Lord had shortened those days, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, whom he chose, he shortened the days. Then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or look, he is there, do not believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. But take heed. See, I have told you all things beforehand. But in those days, after that tribulation, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. The stars of heaven will fall, and the powers in heaven will be shaken. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and great glory. And then he will send his angels and gather together his elect from the four winds, from the farthest part of earth to the farthest part of heaven. Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see these things happening, know that it is near, at the very doors. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my word will by no means pass away. The first thing that Jesus warns about is deception. Beware of deception. If Jesus Christ says that the disciples, the apostles in this case, need to be careful that they not be deceived, then it must be that there will be strong deceptions so that even the disciples could be deceived if they're not careful. History and contemporary times have given us plenty of false Christ and false prophets, and many have been deceived. Now, in verses 7 and 8, Jesus says there will be sorrows. Now, please keep this in mind. Jesus is prophesying of the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. That's what this discussion is all about. Moreover, the disciples asked about that destruction. Many people look at this entire chapter along with Matthew 24 and Luke 21, all speaking of the same thing, as all being about a prophecy of the second coming of Christ. And he will touch upon it. But his main point is the destruction of Jerusalem. Now, even if these verses are about the second coming, they are often still misused, because in verse 7, Jesus said, when all these things are happening, the end is not yet. Now, here again, he's speaking about the end of the temple and Jerusalem. But people think that with the rumors that he mentions in verses 7 and 8, that the end of the world is happening. But that's not true. Jesus says it is not the end, whether of the world or of Jerusalem. Moreover, in verses 9 through 13, Jesus said the apostles will be persecuted. Jesus is blunt. But such a prophecy, right to the faces of these men, will not and does not deter them from the job that has been set before them. They are going to do their job even though it will cost them their lives. Even like soldiers, a soldier will go into the military and go through training, and he's told that he may die and he has to be prepared to die, but he still goes through with it. Police officers go through the same thing. Pregnant women, or women even before the pregnancy, know that it's not going to be a very delightful experience. It will be painful, but there's still billions of people on this planet because they go through with it. We're the same thing with these men here. Jesus is telling them up front, you are going to be persecuted, but that doesn't hold them back. They give their all, and we are here today in the church as a result of their work. He even tells them that some of their family members will turn against them. But Jesus also extends his prophecy of persecution to include all people, that all people will hate the apostles and Christians. But he points out that he who endures these persecutions is the one who is going to be saved. Therefore, regardless of what comes our way, we need to be determined, I'm going to be faithful. I'm going to be faithful even unto death. Then Jesus gives another sign of the impending destruction of the temple and Jerusalem in verses 14 through 20. The arrival of the abomination of desolation. That expression can be explained like this. The abomination of desolation is abominable in the sight of God. Something or someone abominable in the sight of God. Nevertheless, God uses it to make desolate his temple and his city. That's why it's called the abomination of desolation. Abominable to God, but it will be his instrument to make his beloved city and temple desolate. Because Gentiles will enter into the temple in places where they ought not. The abomination of desolation will have no mercy once he begins his attack. Therefore, Jesus is prophesying, or actually giving them his people instruction ahead of time, that if you're in the area, if you're in Judea, if you're in the city, wherever, you must flee at once. Once you hear of the abomination of desolation, that he's on his way, or that you can even see him, get out of there. Don't take time to even pack your clothes. Drop everything and get out of Jerusalem as fast as you can. Because the invading army will have no mercy on anyone. They don't care who you are, Jew or Christian, you will be dead. And that's why he says it's going to be hard for pregnant women or nursing mothers, because they won't be able to flee as fast. I mean, that's how urgent it will be. Just pray that it won't be during the wintertime when travel is a lot slower. Again, that is how urgent this matter is. And incidentally, history tells us that as far as we know, not one Christian died when the destruction of Jerusalem finally happened in AD 70, because they followed the Lord's instructions. The Lord said to get out of here when we saw the abomination of desolation coming. They saw it coming, and they left, and they were saved. When the abomination of desolation attacks Jerusalem and the temple, the human carnage will be so bad that Jesus, who has witnessed and will witness every war that has ever occurred on this planet, says that the tribulation will be the worst ever. Now again, I made reference to Josephus, who was a priest born in the year AD 37. When he was 33 years old, he witnessed the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70 by the mighty and massive and powerful Roman army. And he said that 1.5 million Jews died through either the battle that took place, the starvation, because the Romans cut off the city from all supplies, so people were starving. Anyone who escaped over the walls or through the walls in some manner were captured by the Romans and crucified in full view of their friends and family. And there was strife among the Jews. There were actually battles, not between just the Jews and the Romans, but the Jews were fighting and killing each other because there were factions within the city. And they even resorted to cannibalism. I had to do a paper on the destruction of Jerusalem in preaching school, and man, I couldn't believe the information that I dug up from history on the awful things that happened there. But it was in fulfillment of what Jesus is prophesying right here in these verses. Again, in verses 21 to 23, Jesus says that strong deceptions will come. And he says, do not believe them. He says to his apostles, do not believe it when people claim that the Christ is present. Do not believe them if they say, hey, look, he's over here or he's over there. Because when the Son of God does return, no one's going to have to point him out to you. There's not one person living on that day when he does return who will miss him. He himself will make it very obvious, as I'll show you in just a few moments. But the false Christ and the false prophets will be so strong in their deception that if possible, they'll try to persuade even the elect, the people who should know. Never underestimate the ability and the awesome persuasive powers of Satan to make a deception look real good. I've met many Christians who seem to think that, well, hey, when anything bad comes along, I'll notice it right away. No problem. I know. But then it's really not a deception if it's so obvious, is it? Deceptions look good. Deceptions look like the truth. Deceptions look righteous. Even men who were personally trained by Jesus Christ had to be on the alert lest they be deceived. Now look at verse 23. Jesus is saying that all of this should not be a surprise to the apostles, because Jesus is announcing before time that such deceptions will come. And these things should not surprise us when deceptions come to us, because Jesus here and elsewhere, speaking on other matters, prophesies that deceptions are just a part of living here. They have been since the Garden of Eden. When the Son of Man does arrive, verses 24 through 27 say that he will come in the clouds. He's not going to be hidden in the forest someplace. He's not going to be hidden as a professor in a college someplace. He's not going to be in Montana. He's not going to be any place like that. He's going to come in the clouds, and every person on this planet, every eye shall see him, even those who pierced him, Revelation chapter 1 says. So no one will have to say, hey, did you hear that the Christ has come and he's over here on the other side of the mountains, and we can go over there and listen to him preach? Right away you got to know something's wrong. That's not right. When he comes back, everyone will know about it. Therefore, verses 24 through 27 are about the second coming of Christ. That's not the main point of his discussion here, the main point of his answer. He is answering their question about the destruction of the temple and Jerusalem. But he's trying to point out that associated with that destruction, there's going to be all these deceptions that go along, and you shouldn't be deceived, because when I do return, he says, this is what it's going to be like. So for a moment here, he speaks about it. The destruction of the temple and Jerusalem will happen, now look at verses 28 to 31, during the apostles' generation. That means that the destruction that he is talking about here is not something yet future, unless those apostles are still living. It was to happen during their generation. And he said, even as the coming of summer can be detected by the fig tree, so the coming of the destruction of the wonderful buildings of the temple can be detected. In verse 30, Jesus gives an important key for interpretation. What he taught from verses 2 to 23 describes the destruction of the temple and Jerusalem. And then he inserts that brief mention that I've already brought up about his second coming and what it will be like in verses 24 to 27. But generally his discussion is about Jerusalem and the temple. But then in verse 30 here, he informs the apostles that all these things he is revealing will happen during their lifetimes. They will be alive, at least some of them will be alive. One will at least be dead by this point. But it will happen during their lifetimes, during their lifetime, that generation. And to help them see the certainty of the prophecy of the destruction of Jerusalem, Jesus says in verse 31 that heaven and earth will pass away long before his words about this would ever pass away. Now, heaven and earth is something that we consider to be permanent. But they are not as permanent as the words of Jesus Christ. His words are more permanent. What he has to say is more permanent than heaven and earth. But even that's kind of a weak way of saying it. It's not as though his words are just more permanent. They are permanent. Heaven and earth is not permanent. Heaven, that is the heavens, the universe, as we might call it, not the home of God. Whereas heaven and earth are so grand that it seems they could never pass away, they will. Therefore, in emphasizing the certainty of his prophecy of the destruction of the temple, he gives yet another prophecy, the destruction of the heavens and the earth. Now he addresses himself to that in verses 32 through 37. So let's read the rest of the chapter of Mark 13. But of that day, well, what day? The day he just spoke about in verse 31. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. But of that day, the day when the heavens and the earth pass away, but of that day and hour, no one knows. See how that's different than the destruction of Jerusalem? He was very specific about it. You could know exactly when that is. In fact, the prophecy to which he alluded about the abomination of desolation with Daniel, which is found in Daniel chapter 9, Daniel shows how they could pinpoint when the Christ would come to the earth, when he would be crucified, how long his ministry would last. That's why we know that he preached for about 3.5 years. But of the day when the heavens and earth pass away, he says, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Take heed, watch and pray, for you do not know when the time is. Whereas they did know the time of the destruction of Jerusalem. It is like a man going to a far country who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to each his work, and commanded the doorkeeper to watch. Watch therefore, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming. In the evening, at midnight, at the crowing of the rooster, or in the morning, lest, coming suddenly, he find you sleeping. And what I say to you, I say to all, not just to you apostles, but to the people sitting here today, he would say, I'm telling you, watch. He had just taught the apostles that they cannot know when that destruction of Jerusalem will happen. They can even know the exact hour when it would happen, because he says, when you see it happening, you can leave. But not so with the passing of heaven and earth, which will happen when he returns. Not now, listen, now did you notice what he said about this? Not only are the apostles without knowledge about that time, which would mean any human, but the angels have no idea. In fact, Jesus even went so far as to say that he even doesn't know the time. There's only one who does, and that's God the Father. Therefore, beware when men arise, as they have every generation since the first century, claiming that they know the time. And the books on this are put out all the time, and I've got a lot of copies of those books. In the late great Planet Earth, Hal Lindsey said it would be about 40 years from the year 1948. And it didn't happen. In 1988, there was a book mailed to every church and denomination in America that said 88 reasons why the rapture could be in 1988. And this man had the courage to admit that he was wrong. He wrote a letter later saying he was wrong by 1 year. He said it was supposed to be between sunset September 11th and sunset September 13th, 1989. Well, I'm assuming it didn't happen, because if it did happen, I'm still here, and you're still here. I don't know what that says about us, but it didn't happen. In 1991, during the first Persian Gulf War, as you can see our friend here, Saddam Hussein, on the cover of this book was the hottest selling religious book that year, predicting that was the end, and that war was predicting it. And then we had the Millennium Crisis, you know, the year 2000 and all that. People, when they start coming and saying all these things, remember what is said here. Jesus said, no one knows. And I was thinking to myself, what do these people know that the apostles could not know, that the angels do not know, that Jesus Christ does not know? And some man says, I am a NASA scientist, and I have worked on the Bible and put all the figures together, and now I've got 88 reasons why the rapture will be in 1988. That is his claim to authority. I'm a NASA scientist. Therefore, Jesus says here in verses 34 to 37, be watchful. Jesus is like the employer who left and expects his servants to be busy. And they're always prepared for his arrival to be at any time. Let us therefore always be ready for his return, literally, at any time, for we don't want to be found sleeping, that is, spiritually sleeping, or unfaithful. While the signs of the destruction of the temple were only given to the generation then living, what he says in verses 32 through 36 is for all people. That is why in verse 37 he says, I'm extending my exhortation of watching to beyond the apostles, to everyone. Be on the lookout. Be alert to these things. Now, I know sometimes people are kind of lax in their Christianity because they think, well, you know, the Lord has waited this long. And, you know, from the way we look at time, it has been a long time. Gravity suddenly come today. Others may even think, well, he's never coming back at all. However, look at the destruction of the temple. That happened about 40 years. A little less than that, actually, but about 40 years from the time he made his prediction that it would happen. Where is the temple? It was destroyed by the abomination of desolation. In AD 70, the pagan Romans began a months-long attack on the beloved city of Jerusalem, as I've already pointed out. And even as Jesus said in verse 2, the Romans tore down all the stones. So, if what he said about that is true, I wonder if what he said about his return is true. Well, I choose to believe that he's right. And I know many of you make that choice as well. And if you came here today, and before looking at this chapter in God's Word, you thought, well, I really don't know, and now I do know, and I think I'm not ready to meet the Lord when he comes, well, please don't leave here today without making yourself ready. If you're a Christian who has not been living a faithful life, please rededicate your life today. Ask us for your prayers, for our prayers and help. And if you're not a Christian, please don't leave here today without turning your life over to the Lord
without being baptized, immersed in water, so you can begin life anew. If you have some reason to come forward, please do so right now as we stand and sing.